10-day battle took place in Vietnam that ended up originating in Congress and then being spread out, and it's fairly famous, and a movie was made. It ended up being called the Battle of Hamburger Hill. It was actually what they billed Hill 730 or 937, because it was 937 meters tall. It was a very heavily fortified hill in Vietnam, but of little real strategic value. On May 10th, 1969, a U.S. commander ordered that hill to be captured. And a 10-day battle ensued, and ultimately the hill was captured. It was held for 15 days and abandoned. And to this day, it's debated whether it was worth the 70 dead and over 400 injured as a result of that battle. Whether it was worth it. There's a phrase, and I'm not sure that's where it originated from. Looked at several sources where it may have come from, but there's a phrase called choosing which hill to die on. And that phrase is oftentimes used to refer to an issue or a belief held by an individual that is so important that it's worth fighting for at all costs. And indeed, in life, there are issues so important that we need to go for it. We need to win the battle at all costs. Throughout history, many military commanders have asked, is this hill worth the many casualties that it will cost to win this battle? In our daily interactions with each other, we need to ask ourselves the same question. Is this a hill worth dying for? We're in our, I believe it's our seventh in our series on marriage and family relationships, which is not just about marriage and family, but it's about interactions with one another in every stage and in every phase of life. And this one is on conflict resolution. And if you're looking for a title for the sermon today, it's conflict resolution, choosing which hill to die on. Now, although this isn't necessarily a conflict resolution, it's really the first stage that everybody needs to take regarding conflict that occurs in everybody's life, in some degree or the other, every day of your life. What's the best way to resolve conflict? Well, that's the question. Conflict resolution. How do you resolve it? I think we would agree that the best thing to do regarding conflict would be to avoid unnecessary conflict. There's some conflict that you cannot avoid. There will be differences of opinion, different issues, different sides and stands on those opinions. And sometimes you need to resolve those differences, and it's unavoidable. But really, too many people get into conflicts that aren't necessary. And that's the topic of the sermon today. Many times our conflicts arise from an escalation of a relatively small or unimportant issue. Now, I just want you to be, as we go through this, think of issues that have occurred even within your marriage, with your children, with your work, with your neighbor. In everyday life, are there issues that you've gotten into that didn't really need to be made issues? And of course, there are other times, as I said, when there are issues that clearly need to be addressed and resolved. But too often we get into issues that didn't need to be made issues to begin with. Whatever the issue, whoever the person, the principle is the same. I came across an article that I thought was interesting, and this was entitled, "Arguing with Teenagers, Is This a Hill You Want to Die On?" Not that any of you who have teenagers have ever had that issue. Well, actually, you know you have, and possibly this morning, if you're normal. If you're not normal, thank God for the reprieves. This article, again, applies in principle to any relationship we have. It says, differences of opinion with our teenagers are inevitable. Their task isn't to sort things out into what is a worthy argument or not. Their task is to cobble together their future adult independence from their parents, a job that's incumbent upon all young in all of nature. Adolescent lions are driven from the pride. Fledged birds are tossed from the nest to fly on their own. These things must be. It's nature's way. And teenagers are at that phase where they're thinking, I need to be independent, but they're not ready yet. And so there are conflicts. Our job as adults is to figure out which arguments are important. And whether we're talking about relationships between parent and child, husband and wife, member and member, whatever those relationships are, it's important to figure out which arguments are important. And this author goes on to say, I dare say that most aren't. In the Marines, they ask a question, is this the hill you want to die on? We have to ask that same question as these moments with our kids pop up. There are some hills parents need to die on. And I'm using this, of course, metaphorically. You literally don't want to die on that, but it's just meaning to stand up and to confront an issue and then to resolve the issue. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about dying on a hill, is confronting an issue and resolving that issue. So there are some hills parents need to die on, and you can talk about that with your religious beliefs, at work, whatever it might be. This gives some examples of hills that parents need to die on. There needs to be a confrontation and a resolution to that conflict, such as drugs, how sex will be approached, choices in friends, sticking with school, social and behavioral problems, and deeply held family values. So there are things that we need to make issues of. But we don't need to die on every hill that comes along. Some of them we should just climb up with our children to enjoy the view, such as the hill of whether or not Roy Orbison is any good. This article started off, I broke into it, but the kid came up and he was listening to Roy Orbison, and the kid says, Roy Orbison stinks. And so there was a conflict. Roy Orbison doesn't stink, you know that, right? But he didn't make a conflict out of it, but they had a discussion and they came to some resolution. At any rate, and here's something you might personally maybe identify with in some way in your life, maybe in the past or maybe the current. Said, I heard one sad story of a discussion between a grandmother and granddaughter where grandma made the wrong choice regarding the hill. The child observed that the chair grandma was sitting in wasn't an overstuffed chair, but it was stuffed just right. So grandma's sitting there in this chair that they call an overstuffed chair. The kid comes up and said, why do they call it an overstuffed chair? It's not overstuffed. And the author says, isn't this one of the joys of that children bring to our lives, a fresh view of things and new ways of looking at old paradigms? But it's a conflict. And the kid had a point. If the chair truly was overstuffed, the seams would be ripping and the stuffing would be falling out. So it's not an overstuffed chair, it's just a stuffed chair. Grandma, however, chose to defend adult convention in the face of youthful innovation. Oh, this isn't an overstuffed chair. It's been an overstuffed chair since before I was born. It's going to be an overstuffed chair after I die. Because that's not overstuffed. It's stuffed just right. I mean, a stupid little argument, right? stupid, silly, little conflict. And notice how this turned out. She insisted the chair be referred to as overstuffed. The discussion degenerated into an argument, and then it became personal. Grandmother and granddaughter wound up not speaking to each other for several years. Now, wouldn't you agree that's silly? But have you done similar things in your life with similar issues that really don't really make a bit of difference if this chair is overstuffed or if it's not overstuffed and it's just a stupid name? But we end up making conflicts out of things that should not be conflicts. And that's why what I'm talking about today is choosing which hill to die on. This continues, as these were teenage years, years the child needed all the wise adult counsel and support she could muster, especially during times when counsel with parents was out of the question. Grandma simply wasn't there for her. Further, Grandma missed those years, and they can never be brought back. They're gone. And that over an overstuffed chair. What a shame. Grandma chose to die on that hill. It was the wrong choice. Your teenagers are going to present you with hills, and life is going to present you with hills. Your mate is going to present you with hills. Another member in the congregation is going to present you with hills. They're all over. It's the nature of the beast. You have to decide quickly and wisely if it is a hill to die on or just enjoy the view of this difference that is there. That's a unique perspective. I hadn't looked at it that way before. I don't agree with it, but it's interesting. And it's not an issue of what's morally right or wrong or spiritually right or wrong. It's just an interesting difference. He said, that's your job. And if in fighting on the hill you decide it's not worth more bloodshed, then have the adult maturity, and I might say the Christianity if it's involving another issue, and the humility to accept your wounds and not make the situation worse. Your child will respect you for a wise reversal of a position when wisdom and priorities demand such. And they'll know they can come to you with their problems and they're not going to go ballistic over every little thing. It says, pride and principle are double-edged swords. You can cut your opponent and you can also slash yourself. This is an overstuffed chair. And she ended up cutting herself. If you hear yourself saying, it's the principle of the thing. Just take this example. Well, it's a principle of thing. I mean, somebody said it's an overstuffed chair, and for years it's been an overstuffed chair. It's a principle of thing. This little whippersnapper is coming up trying to say it's not. It's the principle of the thing, and I need to stand up, and I need to die on this hill. Oh, do you? If you hear yourself saying it's a principle of the thing, my guess is that you've taken a die on this hill stand, and it truly isn't worth your life. If you must have pride, take pride in the maturing of your child, the intellect they can bring to bear in a discussion, the workings that are developing minds and personalities. More important thing is maintaining open communication with your child. Trust in them that they can come to you with the hills that maybe they're being called to die on. Are there battles you have chosen to fight with your children, your mate, another member, a boss, an employee, that really was not worth dying on, but you made that an issue anyway? If you're like the rest of us, my guess is yes. Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 3, it says, keeping away from strife is an honor of a man, but any fool will quarrel. And it's choosing when to be in strife and when not to. And we can't avoid strife. We can't avoid conflict. We can't avoid differences because we are all different and we have those differences. Some of them you can avoid and some not. Again, the point of the sermon today. We could avoid a lot of unnecessary conflict if we would choose more wisely which hill to die on. rather than have to die on every hill. As you're going through everyday life, it would be wise to ask ourselves the question, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is this issue? If you just do that, I mean in dealing with your kids, your mate, whatever the circumstance is, just ask yourself, okay, really, how important is this? Overstuffed chair, how important? 6? Nah. I mean, we're talking ones. Not really worth anything. So let it go. We're not talking about violating moral or spiritual principles. Is it worth dying on? Let's look at a number of things that cause conflict in our lives. And as we do, let's rate them on a scale of 1 to 10. And this is just a sampling of things that might occur in our lives. And see what the Bible has to say about some of this. On a scale of 1 to 10. And again, you're going to find and you're going to ask the question yourself as we go through this. Well, that depends. And it does. Every circumstance is different. But on a scale of 1 to 10, is it always important to get what is rightfully yours? You know, in life, oftentimes the conflict is there because somebody has something that's yours. Or you deserve that. And so, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is it? Again, it would depend on the circumstance. Turn to 1 Kings chapter 22. 1 Kings chapter 22, and we'll take a brief look at this circumstance. First Kings 22 and verse 1. It says, for 3 years there was no war between Aram and Israel. No conflict. Okay, so we don't have conflict. And that's where we start with things, isn't it? No conflict yet, but then something comes up. Verse 2, then during the 3rd year, King Jehoshaphat of Judah went to visit King Ahab of Israel. During the visit, the king of Israel said to his officials, do you realize that the town of Ramoth-Gilead belongs to us? And yet we've done nothing to recapture it from the king of Aram. That city belongs to us. It's not theirs. And for 3 years we've let it go. But we think now, I think Ahab said, it's a hill worth dying on. Verse 4, and then he returned to Jehoshaphat, or turned to Jehoshaphat and said, will you join me in battle to recover Ramoth-Gilead, to get what's rightfully mine? Jehoshaphat replied to the king of Israel, why, of course, you and I are one. Your troops are my troops. My troops are your troops. Your horses are my horses. And then Jehoshaphat wisely added, but first let's find out what the Lord says. Pretty good idea. You don't have a conflict. Something comes up that could be a conflict. Find out what the Lord says. You know, go to God and pray about the situation. And say before God, God, is this really worth fighting for? You know, if Grandma would have said, when the kid challenged the overstuffed chair thing, if Grandma would have said, tell you what, I'll be back in a few minutes, and gone in and got down on her knees and said to God, God, this kid is not calling this an overstuffed chair. You know, how important is that, God? You know, I think the answer would have been clear if she were open to wisdom. Okay. Now, Jehoshaphat said, let's first find out what the Lord says. And some things, again, are worth dying for. Metaphorically, you got to take a stand for it. Now, the story goes on that they asked some people for advice, and that's what we do sometimes. We ask others for advice, and many times we ask others for advice that are going to side with us. Yeah, well, they think so too. Yeah, well, let's do that. It may not really be what God wants. And the bottom line was that there was a prophet called Micaiah that really did have an in with God. You know, I find oftentimes people won't call and talk to me about something because they already know probably what I'll say. Okay, and he's not going to tell me what I want to hear. So I'll go talk to somebody else, or I won't talk to anybody. I'll just do it because I'm right. Are we? So verse 17, Micaiah told him in a vision, I saw all Israel scattered on the mountains like sheep without a shepherd. And the Lord said, their master has been killed, and send the rest of them home in peace. In other words, he said, if you demand what is rightfully yours, Ramoth-Gilead, and you go to battle, you're going to die on that hill. Literally. And is it worth dying for? According to God, no. You know, just let it go. It's been 3 years you haven't had it. Don't cause a big fight over it. Just let it go. Don't worry about it. Verse 22, chapter 2, verse 29. So King Ahab of Israel and King of Jehoshaphat of Judah led their armies against Ramoth-Gilead, even after praying about it, because they didn't really want to listen to the advice. Verse 34, an Aramean soldier, however, randomly shot an arrow at the Israelite troops and hit the king of Israel between the joints of his armor. And he said, get me out of here, I'm badly wounded. The battle raged on, and in the end, it says, as evening arrived, he died. He chose to fight a battle that really wasn't worth dying for, according to God, and he lost. Have we done the same thing? Yeah, I think we have. Those of you that remember Davy Crockett, King of the Wild Frontier, do you remember what his mantra was? The thing that he always said? It was, be sure you're right, then go ahead. Not a bad statement. It actually came from John Barber's Handbook of Illustrated Proverbs, written in 1857. He says, be cautious all abroad, mind where you tread, be not deceived, be sure you're right, and then go ahead. You know, Ahab was deceived. He thought he was right, but he went against advice, and he shouldn't have gone ahead. Yeah, if you got to die on the battle, then do it. We all have to stand up for certain things, and it's not negotiable. Other things, we just make silly choices. And we end up in a conflict that does not have to be. Let me ask another question on a scale of 1 to 10. Is it always important to stand up and be counted? Well, spiritually, morally, yeah, right? Always? Scale of 1 to 10? You might be asking yourself again, well, it depends. What are the circumstances? Always a good question to ask. And each thing has to be asked by itself. When the time was right, Jesus stood fast and he died on the hill for all of mankind. And thank God that he stood for what was right. And he stood for spiritual and moral principles and the plan of God. John chapter 19, verse 17, I'll just read it, but John 19, 17 says, and he bearing his cross went forth to a place of the skull, which is called in the Hebrew Golgotha. And he stood up, and he died on that hill for the right reasons and the right principles. And there are times when you need to stand up and die on that hill. But the question is, do you always have to do that? Do you always have to say, I'm right? This is the right principle, and so I need to die on this hill now. Turn to John chapter 8. John chapter 8. Now, I'm not talking about compromising with truth. I'm not talking about just giving up or giving in when it shouldn't be done. But I'm talking about being wise and weighing the circumstance. John chapter 8 and verse 58. Jesus answered, "May I tell you the truth? Before Adam was born, I am." And he was preaching the truth. He didn't back down in the fact that he was the Son of God and the one that was sent to save all mankind. However, it upset them, and it says, verse 59, when Jesus said this, the people picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and left the temple. There was a conflict that was going to be between the Pharisees and himself, and at this point, he was gone. They turned around to pick up a rock, and they couldn't find him. He avoided the conflict. He says, this isn't the hill to die on. It's not time for me to be stoned to death. And in our lives and our circumstances, there's a principle, and maybe it's not the right time to stand up and be counted or to have it as a die-on-this-hill fight. And you have to weigh that. You have to go to God about it and say, is this the right time? Now, maybe the same circumstance later on will be an 8 or a 9 or a 10. But maybe it's time to right now just be like a 3, and it's really not worth dying on at this point. Again, I'm not talking about compromising with the truth. John chapter 10, a little bit later, he did the same thing. Verse 39 in John 10, once more they tried to seize Jesus, but he slipped out of their hands. He avoided the fight. Was he not powerful enough to fight them? Was he not powerful enough to win? Sure he was. But it wasn't his time to die on that hill. It wasn't the hill to die on at this time in this circumstance. Verse 40, then Jesus went back across the river Jordan to a place where John had been baptizing, and he stayed there. He hung out somewhere else because he didn't need to get into this fight, into this conflict. And we need to do the same thing. We need to weigh it. Is this the right time? Is this the right place? Is this the right circumstance? Are they ready? You know, sometimes we might be ready to resolve a conflict, but they might not be, and just the timing is totally wrong. And so in conflict resolution, it's wise to know, is this the time I need to die on that hill? Maybe, maybe not. But at least make that your first thought. Is it worth dying for? Oftentimes conflict arises because it just wasn't fair. You know, it's just, why do they get that and I don't? Why are they able to have this and I don't have that? I mean, we should all be able to be just like totally equal in everything, right? Scale of 1 to 10, how important is this issue? Turn to Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10. And verse 38. This is just a silly little thing again. But it turned into a situation where somebody wanted to fight, make an issue out of it. And Jesus asked them to think about scale of 1 to 10. Luke chapter 10, verse 38, as Jesus and his disciples went on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She had a sister named Mary, who sat down at the feet of the Lord and listened to his teaching. So here's Martha, here's Mary. And Mary, I mean, there's all this stuff to do. And all she does is she goes and sits and listens to a sermon. What's with that? Verse 40, Martha was upset over all the work she had to do. And she came and said, Lord, it doesn't seem fair. Doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work all by myself? And she thought about it. It was an issue where it wasn't fair, where she was cooking the food and she was cleaning stuff up and Mary's still there, just sitting there listening, taking it easy, not helping at all. And she let it stew and she let it get to her. And finally she barged in there and says, "Jesus, this isn't fair. You need to tell her to come and help me. Stand up for what's right. Stand up for my rights. It just isn't right." And she made an issue of it. And verse 41, the Lord answered her and said, "Martha, Martha, you're worried and troubled over so many things." He said, in essence, scale of 1 to 10. How important is this? What's important? I mean, that's the gist of this sermon, is what is important? When, how, the where, the if. What is important? Verse 42, there's only one thing worth being concerned about. There's only one 10. It said, Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her. You know, is there time to help? Is there time to listen? Yeah, there's time for everything. But he says, weigh it. What's important? And that's what we all must do. Scale of 1 to 10, is it always important to defend yourself or to get back at somebody that harms you? Isn't that what conflicts are often about, is somebody said something about me and it wasn't fair? Somebody did something to me that wasn't right. Somebody didn't do something they should have done for me and it wasn't right. And we end up making that a battle to die on. We note the sensitivities today about PC terms, you know, but and really with things, you know, regarding like who's smart and who's needs help developmentally or whatever, the terms go back and forth and it makes your head spin trying to keep up with what is politically correct and what's not, and a reference to a race, and again, I'm not talking about people that are being offensive and saying, making racial epithets and things, but you know, using the wrong term for, you know, whether it's, you know, Negro, black, person of color, and it just goes through and you say the wrong thing at the wrong time or didn't mean to. You know, this person is retarded, mentally challenged, exceptional, you know, what do you, and again, it's totally wrong to be prejudiced, to be making statements that are derogatory, but people get so sensitive about it and about, well, what are they doing to me? And people choose to die on hills, and in gangs they go by and they shoot somebody because they looked at them wrong. You know, certainly not right perspectives. If someone forgets to recognize us or thank us for doing something, they should have noticed me. That causes conflicts. Can they be avoided? Sometimes a hill is worth dying on. You know, when someone is being derogatory, racial, so forth, sometimes the hill is worth dying on. Second, Galatians chapter 2. Galatians chapter 2. You know, Paul looked at this circumstance and he saw that there was a wrong going on and that he had a part to play in it. And he had to determine, is this a hill worth dying on? And in this circumstance, he says, yeah, it is, for the good of everyone involved. And he was working towards a resolution. And this is how he did it. Galatians chapter 2, verse 11. When Peter came to Antioch, Paul says, I opposed him to his face because he was clearly wrong. And so there was a confrontation. There was a conflict. And he is working now at resolving that conflict. And first of all, it had to be exposed for what it was. And the reason it needed to go to this point is because others were being affected by it. Verse 12, before certain men came from James, he used to eat with Gentiles, But when they arrived, he began to draw back and separate himself from the Gentiles because he was afraid of those who belonged to the circumcision group. He was being hypocritical about this. And, you know, he was fine hanging around with the Gentiles as long as there weren't any Jews there that were going to wonder, what are you hanging around with them for? That was wrong of him to do that. There's neither Jew nor Greek, male or female, in God's mind, as far as equality. In verse 13, the other Jews joined him in his hypocrisy, so that by their hypocrisy, even Barnabas was led astray. Even the encourager was being hypocritical in this circumstance, and it was having an effect on the church, and Paul needed to weigh, scale of 1 to 10. How important is this? It's pretty important. I need to address it. I need to confront it. Turn to 2 Samuel chapter 16. Now, there are other times when you have to weigh the confrontation or the potential for confrontation and say, scale of 1 to 10, should I get into this? 2 Samuel chapter 16 and verse 5, as King David came to Bairam, a man came out of the village cursing them. It was Shimei, son of Gera, from the same clan as Saul's family. 2 Samuel 16, verse 6. Now, he threw stones at the king and the king's officers and all the mighty warriors who surrounded him. Get out of here, you murderer, you scoundrel, he shouted at David. The Lord's paying you back for all the bloodshed in Saul's clan. You stole his throne, and now the Lord has given it to your son Absalom. At last you'll taste your own medicine, for you're a murderer. The accusations that Shimei was throwing at this king David that God had appointed, some truth to it and a lot that wasn't true. He didn't take Saul's throne from him. God gave him that throne. He didn't work to subvert Saul at it, but yet he was accused of it. And so there were false accusations going around. Now, we've all had false accusations or comments about us that weren't very nice. What do we do? Is it our right to make it a confrontation? Should we always make it a confrontation? Well, sometimes there needs to be. Sometimes it needs to be resolved. And other times, it'll be okay. Don't need to make an issue out of it. Verse 9, why should this dead dog curse the Lord the king? Abishai, son of Zeruiah, demanded. Let me go over and cut off his head. Now here's Abishai, who wanted Shimei to die on that hill. He's cut his head off. Now, isn't that the approach that sometimes we feel like taking? I'm just going to cut their head off, you know, maybe not literally, but I'm going to get them for what they did. I'm going to show them how wrong they are. I'm going to die on this hill. Verse 10, no, the king said. Who asks your opinion, you sons of Zeruiah? If the Lord has told him to curse me, who are you to stop him? Verse 12 said, and perhaps the Lord will see I'm being wronged and will bless me because of these curses today. Verse 13, so David and his men continued down the road, and Shimei kept pace with him on a nearby hillside, cursing him as he went and throwing stones at David and tossing dust in the air. I mean, if any time anybody deserved to have his head cut off, it probably would have been Shimei and what he was doing with the king of Israel. Right? You'd think that would be like an 8 at least. But David said, no. Let it go. I can live with it. I'm not going to get back at him. I'll let God take care of it. And he was able to not make it a battle that Shimei certainly would have died on. He could have won, hands down. Now, David was a type of Jesus Christ. David had faults. And he had things that people could say things about him regarding. Jesus had no faults, and he was insulted. He was spit upon. He was beaten. And what does it say about him? 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 23. Now, as we're talking about conflict resolution, we have to realize that if we are not really letting it go, and we're just stuffing it and it's building, and we've talked about that before, how, you know, sometimes the anger gets to be like blowing up the balloon and we keep stuffing things. Well, I'm not going to make an issue out of it. I'll just let it go. And we're not letting it go. We're letting it build until finally the explosion. And then you've got this gigantic confrontation. And I'm not talking about doing that when I'm talking about it's not that important. Let it go. You know, and if you really get that concerned about the title of an overstuffed chair, you really got to look at yourself and realize you got a lot of issues personally to deal with, and make it about you, not somebody else. So I'm not talking about just stuffing until the big explosion. But 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 23 says, when they hurled insults at Jesus, he didn't retaliate. It's like David in this case. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. And David was able to do that, and he said, God will take care of it, and he meant it. And if in circumstances you can say, you know what, it really doesn't make that much. I could have this fight. I could have this battle. I might even be able to win it. But is it worth the confrontation? Is it worth getting into this battle? And if it's not, and you say, I'll let it go. Put it in God's hands and really do so and really mean it, then avoid that conflict and don't get into it. Now, if it's something you're just stuffing and your anger is building, it's an issue that you need to go to your brother between you and him alone and then go through the Matthew 18 thing and deal with it. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying in this that you stuff things and don't deal with it. But if you can do as David did, as Jesus did, and say, it's not worth the battle, I'll let it go. I'll forgive. I'll forget. I won't worry about it. Best way to not get into confrontation. Luke chapter 9. Luke chapter 9. And verse 53. You know, sometimes people get into conflict because they're taking my job. You know, well, that's my job. And what are they doing that for? And we got upset at the person. We make an issue out of it. And we maybe take our ball and go home and all kinds of things that people do. Because they took my job. They didn't pay attention to me. We get ourselves in all kinds of situations we don't really need to be in. Luke chapter 9, verse 53. Now, here was an offense against Jesus. As he was gone on his way to Jerusalem, the disciples went ahead and said, hey, you know, Jesus is coming. How about if we have a service here? I mean, you know, what if Jesus were like here on earth for a while? And it said, well, he's planning a church visit to Northwest Phoenix. And he's going to be here, and he's going to give the sermon. Now, my guess was we'd all be here, you know, want to hear him. So what if I then said, no? I said we don't really care to hear him. You know, he can come here, you know, on March 6th, but we're not going to be here. You know, I would think that would be very offensive to him. And this is basically what happened. Verse 53, they didn't receive him because his face was set for a journey to Jerusalem. And verse 54 of Luke 9, and when his disciples, James and John, saw this, they said, Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them, just as Elijah did? This, to me, seems like a hill we want to, like these people, to die on. Okay, because they weren't respecting us. We get upset because somebody didn't respect us. Need to respect me more. Let it go. Verse 55, he turned and rebuked them. He said, you don't know what manner of spirit you are. Son of Man didn't come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. And they went to another village. It's all right, don't worry about it. You know, it'll work out. You don't have to get all upset about it. Somebody didn't treat us the way that we thought we should be treated. Titus chapter 3. We need to be merciful. We need to be patient. And maybe sometimes later, a situation will be worth dying on, require dying on. But is it always the case? Titus chapter 3 and verse 9. He said, avoid foolish controversies. There are some things that just, you don't have to get into it. You don't have to argue that you're right. You don't have to like say, oh, I know this scripture and nobody else knows it. And I need to argue about it. I need to make my point. He said, avoid foolish controversies and genealogies and arguments and quarrels about the law. You know, people get into the exact timing of Passover, counting the moon, and all sorts of things, and there are so many opinions, and people get into fights about it. I got to show that I'm right instead of just doing what you do privately before God. Make that between you and God and not be some great argument, because these are unprofitable and useless. But notice even here, that when there's a situation and there is something wrong, how do you handle it? He said, warn a divisive person and then disfellowship them on the spot. Now, that's not what it says. It says, warn a divisive person once. Okay, you got one time. No, it says once and then warn him a second time. In other words, you're not interested in getting into controversy for the sake of controversy. If there are questions, let's talk about it. Let's discuss it. Let's reason together. But you start with the division, then we've got another issue we have to deal with. And even when there's some division, it says warn him once and a second time. Now after that, I have nothing to do with it. Sometimes enough's enough. You know, don't make confrontation the first thing. Work at resolution. Discussion. Going through the scriptures and talking. Not arguing. Not being unprofitable in that. And then you're going to have to die on that hill. Because when it starts causing division, that's Paul. When it was causing division, he had to go and confront Peter and the others to their face. Because it was becoming an issue of division. And yeah, the battle needed to be won. You need to die on that hill. But it's not the first step you take. Verse 11, you may be sure such a man is warped and sinful. He's self-condemned and you deal with it nicely. And then, no more Mr. Nice Guy. Okay. And in principle, that's the way we need to handle many different things. There are a lot of different circumstances. There are a lot of things we need to stand for. We need to get into that confrontation, that conflict, and then resolve it and to die on that hill. Other things are not worth dying for. Scale of 1 to 10, ask yourself the question. The ones that are worth dying on, die on. The ones that aren't, put it in God's hands. Before I quit here, the marriage tune-up on conflict resolution with Jeff and Debbie it ties in a great deal with this, and theirs is on resolving conflict, particularly within a marriage. And their basic points are going to be putting off the desire to control. Isn't that what a lot of conflict is? I've got to win. I've got to be in control. The other is biting your tongue. Don't say everything you think. Well, I have the right, and I'm right. So I'll say it. Let the chips fall where they may. No, you don't want to do that either. fight or flight. You know, you stand on that hill. Sometimes we get away and we avoid it, and the avoidance only makes it worse. At other times, just fighting makes it worse. And trying to give up the right to be right, work for right relationships instead of trying to be right. So those are the basic points that they'll bring out in the seminar that'll be after we close our service. So we'll take a 5-minute break after services just to set up, and then we'll be back for that, for those of you that are interested in learning from that.